Steuerung Alt entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom.
So, welcome to a brand new episode of Steuerung Alt entfernen, or as we could call it today, Control Alt Delete, because we're at Hub Berlin and this is our very first episode in English and it's also our very first live episode. My name is Linda van Rennings.
I'm Christoph Grössmann.
And today we want to talk about AI and its impact on healthcare and pharma. And to do so, we have an expert with us, so please give a warm welcome to Anjali Möller. So Anjali, you are co-leading, and I have to read it because it's a long name, you are co-leading the Cross-Pharma Artificial Intelligence Program at Bayer Healthcare. That sounds pretty cool and pretty important, but to be honest, I don't quite know what that means yet. So could you, to get us started, introduce yourself and give us an idea of what your job is like?
Sure. That is something that is not easy to explain, but I'll give it a go. And Bayer Pharma, when you think about a pharma company, what do? We make drugs, right? And we try to make the best drugs to meet the unmet medical need of the most vulnerable patient populations out there. And how do we then use artificial intelligence to do that? So traditionally, if you go and look at all the other big pharma companies, they're saying, this is our market data, this is our commercial data, this is our research and development data, and what we're trying to do at Bayer in this cross-pharma approach is to take all of that information and say, how can I use my sales data to improve my research? How can I use my research data to improve my sales? And that's why we have this cross-pharma approach to how we invest in artificial intelligence. And the co-lead part, which we joked a lot about before we came on stage, is because I lead it together with our pharma strategy team, so Michael Heinke, who is part of our Bayer pharma strategy team. And that's because unless you link your investment in technology really closely to how you're making money and to the strategy of your company, pharma or anybody else, it becomes nonsense without that connection. So that's the co-leading part.
Okay, that sounds pretty challenging. So what is a typical day at work for you? So you come to work, maybe you grab some coffee or some tea, and what happens then?
So there's definitely coffee at the beginning. There's normally quite a lot of that. So the joy of the work is really sitting together with the teams, right? So the teams are experts, but experts with a lot of different backgrounds, so a lot of deep learning specialists, but also we have biostatisticians, bioinformaticians, pharmacometricians, legal experts, data privacy experts, medical doctors, of course, and we sit together and we look at our work. So yesterday, for instance, we were sitting and looking at something that Robert Lacraz, our head of oncology, just tweeted about, and it's a piece of research into the enteric gene fusion. So those of you who don't know genetics, don't worry, I won't go too far into that. But we have a drug on the market, and it really is specific to people with this mutation in their genes. And so we were applying a black box deep learning approach to trying to identify those patients without having the need for genetic sequencing. So a traditional day is sitting with a lot of experts who blow my mind, who come from different fields, looking at the data, trying to think how we proceed with each project, tearing it apart, because Bayer, as you know, our slogan is science for a better life. So that means being able to really critically look at it. Is this the right approach? Is that the right mathematical approach? Is that the right biological approach? Is that the right medical approach? And then deciding which way to continue.
All right. And you used to work as a data scientist before, you told me backstage. So that's quite a new field of work. And I think it's not that well known than maybe more established jobs. So could you give us an example of what actually the job of a data scientist is like, and especially why I, as a data scientist, should work in the healthcare and pharma sector?
Yeah, so I love to talk about that. I was a systems biologist before. That's something maybe like a near cousin of a data scientist. And then I made the conscious decision. The talk just before said something so critical. It talked about when you're a data scientist, you have to invest in yourself. And that is so true. It could not be more true. So I decided then to really spend some time with the Johns Hopkins University and through Coursera and really training up my skill sets that I wanted in machine learning to build on top of my systems biology background. And then I worked at Thomson Reuters before and really did a lot of different projects for lots of different pharmaceutical companies. And you always start with what is the question that you're trying to achieve. And for us in healthcare, it's normally, how do I find patients with this disease? How do I treat patients with this disease? What are the mechanisms causing this disease? And then you have to look at your data. Do I have enough? That's always the first question for a data scientist. Do I have enough data to even make it worth my time or my team's time to continue this conversation with you? And in the field of rare diseases, so I'm working on looking at a project right now at hemophilia patients, and it's a rare disease. We don't have a lot of data, so you say, okay, what can we do with the data we've got? What is actually possible? That's always the first step. Then we really begin to work very iteratively. So in short little sprints, then trying to model the data, trying to train our algorithms, a lot of exchange. What I really liked and why I moved into data science as well is I have a daughter, a very young daughter, and for parents out there with small children, I would really recommend data science as a field to train in and to move in, because you can also just work at home. So you can work at home, you can work remotely. I'm not really affected by noise around me, so I can just work with a headset in a cafe in Prenzlauer Berg here in Berlin. It's no big deal. And you can work, analyze your data, and be part of an international team, and that's really critical. So you can constantly be publishing your results if you're an R programmer, Bioconductor, CRAN, on one of the Git repositories. You can constantly push stuff back, have feedback immediately, improve your code, go back and look at the data again. And in the end, the most critical part of that life cycle is then validation. And so you talked about what's special about healthcare. So I've only ever been in health research, in looking after hard-to-treat diseases. So I was at Cancer Research UK before that. And it's always then, is what I'm doing the most ethical approach? What effect will it have on patients? So a typical example of some of the problems I started off working on in my career was then, how often do I take blood from a patient? And you think, all right, that's not a very complex problem for a data scientist. But if you have a patient and you're trying to understand how their disease is progressing, or you're trying to understand what medication you should give them, then you need to take blood at regular intervals during their treatment. We have huge intervals where a patient's not coming into the hospital, huge intervals where we just have the patient missing visits, and we have sparse data sampling because of that. So we have to then look at other data sets, real world data, and try to say, how can we use that data to understand what's happening to that patient in between those blood samples? A lot of the work I first got involved in Bio is then, what do we do for children, newborn babies who can't give lots of samples? How do we understand what's happening in their body based on the data we've got? And so the difference for us is always this ethical component. So we're always sitting with doctors, with our data privacy officers, with their ethic councils at different hospital networks, and trying to say, maybe I would like a million data points, but I can't take that kind of samples from a poor, vulnerable patient population, a newborn baby who has a very serious disease, perhaps is suffering from hemophilia. So what can I do with the data I've got? What can I do that's a little bit more creative or a little bit more intelligent with data that's being collected worldwide from different populations? Oh. That's what's a little bit different in healthcare.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. You've already touched upon it. Bayer is betting big on AI, but how can people benefit from it? When Bayer is applying AI, what is the benefit for a patient?
Mm-hmm. So it's a big question, but if I look at where a lot of my work right now is focused on, it's trying to identify patients who are undiagnosed. So there are certain diseases where we have treatments available for them. I'm not just talking about Bayer, I'm talking about humanity. We have certain treatments for some diseases. We have preventative medication for heart failure, for stroke. We have a variety of different treatment options in cancer. But you have to know exactly the profile of the disease of your patient before you can know how to treat them. And sequencing is still expensive. A lot of tests for specific mutations can cost a patient 5,000 euros a test. To go to your doctor and you present with lung cancer, he's not going to immediately say, I'm going to test you for every possible mutation. We're going to do some whole genome sequencing, whole exome sequencing. It just doesn't happen. So it's about making it easy for your doctor to look at all of the data that's available, all of the data that's available about people who maybe have similar symptoms to you, and then to be able to diagnose very accurately what you're suffering from, so that whether it's a bioproduct or not, in the end, you're getting the best treatment that you need as a patient. And I think data scientists, we all have families, right? We all have people who we know who are at risk, who are suffering from these very serious diseases, and so that's definitely a key focus area. We also spend a lot of time on something called patient journeys in our project work. So Linda asked me, what's a normal day look like? And one part is just staring at the data, which any data scientist will do. But if you're also working in pharma, we look at what is it like for that patient when they come into the hospital, when they first get diagnosed, what data is available, how does the doctor make a decision about their treatment based on an algorithm, on a tool, on something that's been provided.
So AI is a big buzzword around here at Berlin as well. But when we talk about it, you already mentioned the ethics component. Are there any obstacles in applying this technology? Where do you see this connected to the healthcare sector? Are there any difficulties?
I think if you look back, if you'd asked me this question last year, I would have been a lot more hesitant about how to answer that. So last year, we're still working on guidelines, but just last week, the FDA published guidelines on AI in the use of software as a medical device. We see the EMA being very engaged on discussions around the use of artificial intelligence. And Bayer co-founded the Alliance for Artificial Intelligence in Healthcare together with other pharma companies so we could specifically talk to regulators about what do we need to do to make sure that our results are reproducible, that they're robust, that our algorithms are properly validated. So I'd say, like the dawn of sequencing in the early 90s, it's a new technology and it's going to completely change healthcare. When I look at my six-year-old and I think about what's going to happen when she goes into the hospital, when she is in the age range to be at risk of heart failure or stroke or any of these other diseases, chronic conditions that we see are affecting populations today, she's going to have a totally different experience to my mother, who would go and have that same appointment today. But it's about making sure that if her doctor's making a diagnosis, it's robust. And that is regulated tightly in our industry, but it's also something that, as a human being, everyone cares about. Nobody wants the wrong diagnosis. So this validation is so critical.
So just one more question sliding in. Bayer is a big corporation and investing a lot of money into this field, AI. But how is Bayer working together with startups? And there may be startups out there just developing AI technologies. How do you connect these fields? How are you working there?
Yeah, actually, so that's a really great question, Chris, because that's central to our strategy on artificial intelligence at the moment. We heard the talk before something about the stagnation of skills or the rust of skills. And if you take data scientists and you lock them up in a big corporation and you don't give them the opportunity for academic exchange, for international exchange, to talk to startups, then that's what you get. You get decayed, out-of-date skills, and you get it very rapidly in our field. So we have our Grants for Apps program, which is an incubator for different startup companies, and we were the first pharmaceutical company to set up that kind of incubator. And in addition, we have lots of collaboration partners with academic institutes, with the Broad Institute, with the Oreo Biobank in Finland, are some of our big partners for that kind of exchange. And maybe to be a little bit more specific, so right now we're working on a project with a startup called Turbine, mm-hmm. and they went through our Grants for Apps program, and what they do is they model the effect of combination drug therapy. So if you think about a patient who is suffering from or who is at risk at stroke. They're not just taking one pill every morning. So my mother-in-law, she is in her late 70s, and she has a whole host of medication that she has to take every morning. So what Turbine are doing is they're modeling the effect of combination therapies. And we work together with them. I mean, the lovely thing about working in a big old company like Bayer is how much data we have. So our data goes back decades. And for all of you who are data scientists and work in machine learning, you know you need positive and negative data sets. And we have lots and lots of historical data that we can train our algorithms on. But then what we have to do, and you talk about what makes you an attractive partner for a startup company, is we have to work out how to share our data. And we do that directly through different contracts. We do that as part of consortia. We work, of course, to protect our intellectual property and to ensure patient privacy. But at the same time, it has to be easy to share data, to work on models. Sure. It's our real asset at Bayer that we have decades of all of this clinical and experimental data. And now that puts us in a good position through partnerships to exploit that.
So Anjali, unfortunately, we are already coming to an end, so time is running. But at least I want you to take an outlook on the next maybe 10, 20, 50 years. I know we can't look into the future, but let's pretend. How will healthcare and pharma look like in the future, and what role will AI play in this?
Mm-hmm. So if you look at what will pharma look like in the future, I think that's a very interesting question. So I think that there'll be much more innovation driven through partnerships, mm-hmm. so that you see a huge rise in our industry of biotech companies in the field of machine learning. So many interesting new startup companies, also middle-sized companies, and we're entering into partnerships or have been in long partnerships with all these players. And I think this kind of outward-looking approach is going to be key to survival for the pharmaceutical industry. That staying as one huge monolith is just the route to extinction, and I think as an industry we've realized that. I think the other part that will change for patients in particular is decentralized care. So what does that mean? I think everyone here saw the launch of the new Apple Watch, or you were hiding under a rug in your carpet if you missed it, but I think we're going to see a lot more points where data is collected in your daily life about your healthcare, and we're going to see a lot more intelligent ways to then try and use that data to give you the right treatment options when you're visiting your GP, when you're in the hospital for a serious treatment. So we're going to see a higher density of data points, and that's going to open up a lot more opportunities for machine learning approaches and for diagnosis.
Okay. So we got 90 seconds left. At the end of our podcast, we already asked our guests three similar questions. But we haven't scripted this beforehand, but it's just three personal questions.
Okay, three personal questions.
Not too difficult. So just to get to know you a little bit better at the end of it, is there a Twitter account you can recommend to our audience?
Yes, so the Alliance for Artificial Intelligence in Healthcare is definitely a good Twitter account to watch. So we just launched in January, I would...
Very good. What is the book you've been reading recently? Can you recommend us a book?
You do know I'm a working mother. What book have I been reading recently? I'm going to have to say that for me, it's a very long day at the moment, followed by picking up my daughter and making dinner. And so the latest Star Trek on Netflix is quite key to my evening at the moment.
And perfect. And one last question is, how do you switch off from your daily business? How do you relax?
So my husband's a programmer, and I was talking to a colleague who's here with me. A relaxation for us, our date night is going to the tech meetups in Berlin. So this is how we relax, or trying to talk about the latest technology we've seen. So yeah, I relax through talking about data science and work. I mean, to be honest, I'm very... if they didn't pay me, I'd probably still do the same thing. That's a cheesy thing to say, but to some extent, it's...
It sounds pretty nice. So thank you very much. We're already out of time, made it on point. If you want to listen to our podcast, Steuerung Alt Entfernen, or the International Digital Control Alt Delete online, we are available on every major platform, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, you name it, or on bitcom.org/podcast. So thank you very much, Angelique, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And we wish you all a nice day at Hopperlane. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war Steuerung Alt Entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom. Weitere Folgen findet ihr auf www.bitkom.org/podcast.